Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 24th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, contributing editor at the New Republic, author of the AP newsletter, The Other One.
The only one.
Alex Perrine, also host of the Politics of Everything. And then we'll be hearing from Andy Kindler from andykindler.com. Meanwhile, Republicans gear up to filibuster the debt ceiling hike. Biden agenda held hostage by corporatist Democrats. However, a bipartisan vote in the House increases the defense budget beyond even what the Pentagon wanted. And that same House approves $1 billion in military aid for Israel, supposedly for the Iron Dome. Little wiggle room there. Meanwhile, a senior U.S. diplomat to Haiti resigns over the Biden administration deportations. CDC recommends boosters for 75-year-olds and over.
65.
CDC chief overrules the agency panel to extend that booster recommendation to healthcare workers as well. Meanwhile, New York State hospitals fear staffing shortage as its vaccine mandate looms for hospital workers. The House January 6th committee investigation sends subpoenas to multiple Trump aides. And the Arizona hand count shows that Donald Trump lost. Shows it again. The question remains, who will audit the auditors?
Ooh.
Lastly, the Biden administration to issue a regulation cutting hydrofluorocarbons, significant source of CO2, by 85% in the next 15 years. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday here. Very casual demeanor.
Yeah.
Emma Vigeland is
right
here.
That's why I was cursing you out before the show.
That's because it's Casual Friday,
right?
And we just, everybody lets loose.
When I let loose, you know, I start drinking at 8 a.m.
Right.
Coming to work.
Well, it's important to keep hydrated.
And then
so
I let out all of my frustrations on you. People don't know.
Bill O'Reilly taught us.
People don't know what's in this mug or what's in this even more mysterious.
Right. It's like a liter size bottle.
Yeah,
of,
it's yeah, cold brew.
Whatever you want to call it, that's fine.
With absinthe.
It is Casual Friday, and we got a lot of news. I mean, this resignation by, I mean, honestly, in 20 years of doing this, I can remember one other resignation that was made on a principled resignation, and I can't remember exactly. I believe it was a diplomat to Turkey or Greece, a United States diplomat to Turkey or Greece. I can't who resigned over the Iraq War, and that was probably 15 years ago. That's just off the top of my head. But this was rather impressive. I mean, and just simply because there doesn't seem to be any concept or tradition in this country. Certainly, you see it more in Britain, for instance. The idea of resigning out of principle. Just runs contrary to everything that our capitalist society has suggested. Like, and there's something else to it too. This sort of concept of like, well, constructive engagement. I mean, you look at all like the people in the Trump administration who ostensibly were there because they were going to be the checks and balances on everything.
Right. There's like a concept of honor in walking away that doesn't exist necessarily in the United States.
And it's not just a question of honor, although that's, I guess that's part of it, in integrity, but it also, it highlights, I mean, the idea that this guy, Daniel Foote, he was appointed special envoy to Haiti over the summer, shortly after the assassination of Jovenel Moïse. And it gives us a sense, at least, as to how various communities around the world, and I mean, certainly who are involved in this, also view this. I mean, and also a sense of like internally there is, and of course, this guy's not involved in the Department of Homeland Security, but internally there is a sense of, you know, like, what are you doing? Certainly, Daniel Foote would have a sense of just how bad things are in Haiti following these two disasters over the summer, and then the sort of political upheaval that comes with the assassination of a sitting president.
He, in his resignation letter, also noted that part of his resignation was the Biden administration's meddling in Haiti's governmental affairs, which is also, I think, another layer of, wow, we don't see that every day in the United States, an acknowledgement of the United States' role in destabilizing Haiti politically.
Yep. And he wrote specifically to Blinken, "I will not be associated with the United States' inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants to Haiti, a country where American officials are confined to secure compounds because of the danger posed by armed gangs in control of daily life. We have a specific program to address these exact situations. We actually have multiple ones, but there's the temporary protected status, which seems quite obvious would apply. If you're going to have that program, it would seem quite obvious that it applies to the Haitian people now as much as any other time. And then just sort of like, you know, the question of some form of refugee status when you have this kind of disarray in the country and it is incredibly violent." Here is Jen Psaki just not getting it. I mean, we saw the images of the Custom and Border Patrol horseback riders with their reins or whatever it was that they were using to corral,
to whip
and whip these immigrants who, incidentally, were returning from Mexico. They had crossed the river to get food for their families who were in the United States.
They were carrying plastic bags with what appeared to be styrofoam that contained food.
We should just say they were swinging those cords around as they were menacing them with the horses. The photographer says he couldn't see anybody whipped by it.
So. Okay, so that was just, you know,
it was the cosplay element of, you know, they're trying to appear like overseers at the very least.
And so how do you address this? Well, here is Jen Psaki showing us
this is
one of those
structural change.
Tell us how you don't get the point.
Big structural change.
Here we go.
So what he has asked all of us to convey clearly to people who are understandably have questions, are passionate, are concerned as we are about the images that we have seen is, one, we feel those images are horrible and horrific. There is an investigation the president certainly supports, overseen by the Department of Homeland Security, which he has conveyed will happen quickly. I can also convey to you that the secretary also conveyed to civil rights leaders earlier this morning that we would no longer be using horses in Del Rio. So that is something, a policy change that has been made in response. But separately, all related, it's also important for people to understand what our process and our immigration process is and what the steps are that are taken.
I mean, talk about, like, we understand that we need to address the optics of this.
Yeah. Images, as Matt pointed out.
And we have made a massive policy change in our optics policy. And we are no longer going to allow the optics of something that bad. It is. We'll talk more with Alex Perrine in a moment about the increasingly just muddled and inhumane in many respects and cowardly policies of the Biden administration when it comes to immigration, amongst the other many topics that we have.
Does it matter if they're wearing their cowboy hats and using their reins to whip around if they're on robotic horses? Perhaps we could take the horse element, you know how you take the human element out of AI or with self-driving cars? You can make the horses a lot more efficient if you use the robot horses like the robot dogs we have in New York, or maybe just put them on ATVs.
We should give them like those floating drone platforms with like some laser tasers.
We need sharks with freaking laser beams on their heads.
I don't think that you should underestimate the potential value in having the border guards wear pastels.
It's a good point. They would look a lot better.
I think we have a very there's a very harsh colors. They're a little bit too rich and dense. Maybe if they were wearing pastels, things would be a little better. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Folks, we have a couple sponsors today of our program. First, of course, it's Friday. One of my favorite sponsors, with all due respect to all the others, SunsetLakeCBD.com. We just got some new merch in, actually.
That t-shirt, which I took home yesterday, is the softest t-shirt I've...
Is that right?
It's incredible. So everyone should take the remaining ones.
Bradley was very excited about the hat. I, of course, was very excited about the CBD tincture with melatonin. That is my go-to now to try and go to sleep. And it is very often successful. I have never, ever heard the level of enthusiasm that I heard from Bradley when I said there is fudge infused CBD with CBD. Of course, we have they have coffee, they have salves, they have lotion, and right now, for the whole month of September, which frankly, folks, is just about to end. It's the end of their summer sale. 50% off all hand-trimmed hemp flower, smalls, and keef. Sales run through the end of the month of September. They're ramping up for their 2021 harvest. So to celebrate 50% off of all of their premium hemp flower, just use the promo code FLOWERPOWER at checkout. FLOWERPOWER at checkout gets you 50% off. But left is best. Gets you 20% off all the other products. They, of course, have that subscribe and save feature now, 25% off if you subscribe, so you don't have to think about it. Things like the tincture and the salve and the coffee and the fudge, of course, the gummies. People just, we've gotten such great response to this, to Sunset Lake CBD. They have practice regenerative farming practices. They know pesticides, all integrated pest management, 100% organic fertilizer, and they are a great movement partner. They support the, supported our Afghanistan, our Afghan fundraising, and the nurses in Worcester who are on strike still at St. V's. Check it out. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Also, lastly, it is Friday, so Emma's a favorite sponsor, of course. It's the modern bidet that attaches directly to your toilet in under 10 minutes. I'm talking about Tushy. I guess it's been now over a year that Kyle said to me, I got a bidet, and it's changed my life. And I don't know if it was right around the time that we got, we started, we're sponsored by Tushy, but I got the 2.0 and then the 3.0, and it is incredibly easy to put on your toilet, and it fundamentally changes the experience of wrapping up the part of going to the bathroom.
Gotcha.
I don't know how else to express that.
Loud and clear.
It really, it's one of those things where you get to be my age and you're like, what would the trajectory of my life been had I found this out 25 years ago?
That's an existential question.
It really, but I will never know the answer, but you can.
The butterfly effect.
Tushy is the modern bidet for people who poop. You just poop, you wash, you pad dry. Tushy bidet washes your bum with water for a better clean than toilet paper. That's obvious. Washing with water, obviously, less irritating, more soothing, and more efficient. Tushy bidet is easy to install, attaches to your toilet in under 10 minutes. You don't need any electricity. You don't need any plumbing. Use a Tushy bidet that reduces your toilet paper use by 80%. It saves you money. It's eco-friendly and it's stylish. Start washing with a Tushy bidet for a better clean. Go to hellotushy.com/majority. You will get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for Majority Report listeners at hellotushy.com/majority for 10% off. After you buy and install your Tushy, you can show it off. Tag at hellotushy on Instagram. Our links are in the YouTube description and in the podcast description. Now, I would like to welcome back to the program the host, or I should say co-host of the Politics of Everything, contributing editor at the New Republic, and author of the AP newsletter on Substack. That's right. That one.
That one.
Hello, Alex.
Hi, Sam. Hi, Emma.
Hey, Alex.
So, you know, we've been sort of talking about this, you know, I would say this little era that we're in right now that's going to take place over the next, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, since January. I mean, mm-hmm. really in many respects, you know, who was going to be the problem? I think at various times it was like, is it going to be Manchin? Is it going to be Sinema? Is it going to be folks like Mark Warner? It feels like in the House, it is like sort of the Mark Warner types. I want to talk about all this. And I also want to touch on what's going on with the Biden immigration policies, because it feels like the past 2 or 3 weeks in particular, the past month, we have reverted back to like 2003,
right?
On some level, just in terms of the media and the way that the Democrats are functioning. And then sort of we jumped to 2009, the media and the Democrats are operating. I mean, it really does feel like that to a large extent, doesn't it?
Yeah. And to be fair, that was kind of the Joe Biden's promise, wasn't it? Like, elect me and it'll be like 2007 again.
Like, well, back to normal.
I mean, I guess, yeah, put it that way. But I guess the difference here is the Biden administration. At least when the Obama administration did this, right, in 2008 and 2009, they were already negotiating against themselves. Right. They didn't seem to have an agenda. Yeah. In some respects, right? They were, you know, sort of the lead from behind. Biden has an agenda. the $3.5 trillion bill is the Joe Biden bill.
Right.
And, you know, the Bernie Sanders one was the $6 trillion one. Really, you know, and even Joe Biden's was maybe $5 trillion at the beginning.
Originally, yeah.
And it's just bizarre to watch the media tweet about how this fringe is trying to sink his $3.5 trillion. Yeah. But the fringe being everybody who wants to vote for the $3.5 trillion.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I mean, I think a recurring theme we've gone back to over and over again since January is who has learned their lessons in politics and Congress and in the political media, who has learned lessons from the last few years and who was just waiting for a chance to sort of go back to the way of doing things before. And a lot of the political media, especially TV, can't figure out a story to tell that isn't left fringe sinks, left fringe threatens agenda of Democratic president. And as you say, it's patently absurd because the left fringe is the one that is actually trying to do the Joe Biden agenda right now. I think what is interesting is the difference you identified, which is that Joe Biden's administration has things it wants to do and is trying to get Congress to do them. And the Obama administration in its first term was sort of like, let Congress take the lead. You guys handle this. And, you know, we heard from we heard in reporting from Biden administration early on a lot of talk of them having learned their lesson from what Obama did wrong in allowing Congress to not, you know, do everything they should have done with their majority. So they talked the talk, but it's late September, right? Like we're talking about the entire Joe Biden agenda being stuck in one bill that it's taken months to even get to the point of final negotiations on whittling it down even further.
Yeah, I don't even know if we're there yet. Like, yeah. Pelosi and Schumer announced a taxation framework, and I think they're lying. I mean, because there are no details whatsoever. And I think the idea was just, and it doesn't seem to be like they're not announcing like what the number is. They're not announcing what the mechanisms are. They claim that there's an agreement, and it's hard to sort of parse as to whether it means there are some taxes that we've said, okay, we're going to raise this set of taxes versus that set of taxes. For instance, we're going to raise it through the income tax versus the estate tax. I'm simplifying because we just don't know. Or that we're going to raise it through the estate tax, but we're still going to allow the step-up basis, which essentially, in many respects, eviscerates this. Like, somehow there's like some, if you gift it to somebody, it's subject to it's the fact that it may have increased in value. But if you bequeath it to somebody, it's just like one when you die and give it, as opposed to just live and give it. Right. It just seems
bizarre. That seems to create some perverse incentives for the relatives of rich elderly people.
It basically means that like super wealthy people aren't even going to like give them the money to even their kids, or like they're gonna it basically encourages even more hoarding of the wealth. But we don't even have that at this point. And where is, like, why isn't the Biden administration, why is it that we saw I guess it was yesterday in this vote for the Iron Dome funding, and we should say there's some question in that Iron Dome funding legislation. Maybe it was just cut and pasted that this money could be used for the specific operation that was involved in basically going into Gaza. That operation supposedly ended in May. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was just cut and paste and it was still in that legislation. But in terms of its ability to be used for other things in addition to Iron Dome. But we saw AOC basically switch her vote at the last minute. I would imagine it had something to do with like
redistricting New York State specifically, because Bowman voted yes, and he's probably going to get redistricted for, I think, Westchester County will probably encroach on into his district at some point. I'm not exactly sure, but it's notable to me that someone like Ayanna Pressley voted no. And she's, I'm not trying to say she's like right-wing Democrat by any means, but of that group, I would say she's the least progressive, if I was to put it on the spectrum, than Bowman and AOC. So I think that there's something specific to New York that we need to be keeping.
Well, the point being is that they found some leverage, right? I mean, because this is not, there was some leverage there. And
at the same time, AOC is voting to block bomb sales to Israel. So there's something about the Iron Dome vote specifically. And I'm not excusing it, but I think that there's... And then the reports of her crying. There's something happening.
They found a way to apply leverage, right?
Yes.
Right. And the bottom line is they found the leverage there for the $1 billion for Israel. If this infrastructure bill fails,
right?
I mean, in addition to the Biden essentially administration being over and done and having really accomplished nothing that has any lasting, you know, they did the $1.5 trillion COVID relief, but then it's just basically Dunsville. Now, I don't want to ignore the judges. They've been pretty good on judges so far, but that's not going to last if they lose the Senate. Mm-hmm. And we can all imagine what the narrative is going to be if this whole thing fails. I mean, And I also think that, like, the damage of this will be greater than just even the Biden administration's, you know, 4-year term or 8-year term. I mean, I think this is going to resonate for a long time if they fail to do this. And they don't seem to be deploying anything. Like, I mean, I don't know what you have to do, but how about, you know, calling Joe Manchin and going, like, hey, man, like, I got people who want to investigate your daughter. I mean, honestly, like, I mean, this is what hardball politics is supposed to be, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And I don't know. Obviously, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But a situation like this was predictable to an extent that couple idiots like you and I could have predicted it, you know, months ago. Like, all right, Sinema might be a problem. Manchin might be a problem. This group of the problem solving gang, whatever they call themselves in the House, like, they are organized specifically to undermine you. With, you know, you could have foreseen months in advance that these are the people who will hinder your agenda. They are in the process right now of hindering it. And I don't, like, what is being done? Like, who, what is being done outside of the normal sort of congressional negotiations over things like taxes and stuff like that, right? Like, I remember reading, I think last month, maybe the month before, that, like, Neera Tanden, her job was going to be to go out there and make sure that the reconciliation bill passes. And, like, all right, what has she been doing to help that along? You know, and
Desta's like sending out emails basically saying, cut, 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 get this done now. And your attendance been MIA. Speaking of 2007 again.
I think we said this at the time. There was talk that they were going to get this reconciliation stuff done in March and April.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and the idea was you need to do this while people are still, like, you know, the Republicans, everybody was reeling from how quickly the $1.5 trillion COVID relief bill was there. And they should have just immediately gone right into this, like this playing it out. There's no one, if you've already got the agenda,
yeah,
you have the upper hand, because those playing defense and trying to thwart your agenda, they need time to build. They're reacting to you.
Yeah.
So they need time to build their war chest and whatever it is. You know, they need time for Joe Manchin to get on a phone call with the No Labels people and say, hey, you gotta, you know, give some money to a couple of people, you know, to help with this. And now Joe Manchin's coming out talking about the expansion of Medicare. I mean, they're going to rip this thing to shreds.
And Manchin at the big, you know, months and months ago, Manchin wanted he wanted a bigger number.
$4 trillion.
He wanted $4 trillion. And again, I mean, I remember Schumer saying in June or July, like, the Senate's going to have a busy August, right? Like, I'm going to schedule all these votes. We're going to have a real busy August. And, I mean, they didn't. And the as you say, the thing that couldn't, the lesson that, that no one seems to have learned is that when you let these things get negotiated endlessly and picked apart, not only do they inevitably get fundamentally worse, but they get less popular. They, and that's what the foes of this are. That is their entire game.
Yep.
Like, negotiate it down, make it controversial. And then you get stories where, you know, Joe Biden's agenda is now being treated as the crazy thing the left wingers want. Right. Like, it actually took months of groundwork to get to that place. And now we are here. And again, this was all extremely predictable. And if someone in the administration could have predicted it, what did they do to prevent it from happening?
Seemingly nothing. And neither did the Senate. And really, the moment, I mean, and part of it was this whole notion. And if you go back to, like, when, you know, Biden was inviting Republicans to come across and meet with him, and that didn't go anywhere. And then they allowed Kyrsten Sinema. Joe Biden went behind Harry Reid's back in 2000. I think it was, I can't remember, in 2010 or 2000. I don't know when it was. I think it was in that one of the fiscal cliffs at that time, and went behind Harry Reid's back to basically try and make a deal with Mitch McConnell to cut Social Security and to undercut Harry Reid's attempt to leverage this stuff. And then I look back on, I think it was in 2017, in the fall of 2017, where the Republicans were looking at what the Democrats are looking at right now. Mm-hmm. No budget, debt ceiling. And Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi marched into Donald Trump's office and said, mm-hmm. we're taking that off the table for you.
Yep.
And, you know, like, yeah. Like, all of this has been memory hold.
Yeah.
And it was 4 years ago. And by doing that, it basically made it much easier for the Republicans to come back and do all the Trump tax cuts.
Yep.
There seems to be, like, no accountability about, and, you know, put aside the ideological politics associated with this, there seems to be no accountability in terms of just sheer competence. Like, you have a job to do. Why is it that Mitch McConnell, you know, functions like he's some type of, like, magical being from or alien with special powers, you know, as soon as he hits our oxygen? But when you guys do this, it's just like, and, you know, and this is the thing that, you know, more cynical people will say, well, they want to lose. Like, they, you know, but that's, you know, like, then why the Kabuki theater? Like, Joe Biden could have come out with a $2.5 trillion bill, right? I mean, Joe Biden could have said from the beginning, we don't want to do any of this, because frankly, the end result is going to be worse for Joe Biden's political fortunes. It's going to be worse for his legacy. Chuck Schumer ostensibly wants to be the majority leader. No one forced him to be it. And he's not going to have a majority if he continues this with this level of incompetence.
You have to wonder. I mean, I do wonder what is the sort of theory of politics of everyone involved in basically sabotaging this and making sort of a career of sabotaging this. And I think with things like Democrats preemptively letting Trump get a debt ceiling deal without a fight, right? and in things like Biden making a big show of inviting Republicans to help negotiate a deal, there's the surface level reading is like they still think that they get credit for being the adults in the room. They still think that they will get the people will see that they are not crazy partisans and they are trying their best to be serious and adult. They don't realize that you no longer get any credit for being the adult in the room and that no one cares anyway. Voters certainly don't care. But I think, like, at some level, you know, the it is just like they can't foresee actually like trying to use leverage or use hostage taking or use like those kind of that kind of brinksmanship. They are not willing to do it because, and I mean, this is at a really oversimplify it, like because they're still all sort of working for the markets, right? Like Republicans are willing to act like they will do it. They act like they will pull the trigger. We are just crazy enough to do it. And Democrats cannot, you know, the Democratic leadership cannot bring itself to that point. And so that's how every one of these negotiations ends the same way.
Right. And we should say that they're able to deploy that leverage, like we just said,
yeah,
to the left, yeah, because they're, you know, they're not concerned with, like, I don't know, the, you know, the value system of the left is right. Just not something that is, you know, what they're concerned about. I mean, the markets are to the right of them, and that's where they genuflect. It's also not, I mean,
but no, and the political part of it is, that's what I said, like, what is their theory of politics? Because you know, we all sort of get that Joe Manchin has to act a certain way to be elected in the state he is elected in. Doesn't explain a lot of his decision making.
Right. There's nobody on the ground in West Virginia going like, hey man, this whole thing with dental for Medicare, I don't know.
I don't know about that.
That seems
a little...
What next?
Like, yeah, what am I going to get? What do I get out of having dental added to Medicare? Like, how does it benefit exactly. me? Besides, like, in the one really obvious way.
Right. The dental thing is one thing, but I don't like going to the dentist. I mean, like, who's saying that?
But like these moderates in the House, you know, they have, I don't know. It's this crazy idea that they have to stop the runaway train of legislation before, because like passing too many things will doom them. That's nuts.
Well, I understand what the moderates in the House are doing. It's not a question of constituency. I mean, it is simply, we want to avoid taxes. We have rich donors and our job is here is to slow the road. That's their job. But the Biden administration is sort of like, you know, to take these things at face value, for the media to take these things at face value just seems, you know, sort of stunning on some level. But here's the other part of it is like, and we're seeing the same dynamic in terms of immigration. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we can say that Joe Biden was elected to bring back 2007 and bring back 2003. There's your cat. And to bring back, you know, but one thing that was also seems to be clear was that Joe Biden's election was a repudiation of Donald Trump's immigration policies. And I, you know, like I look at this, what happened with these Haitian immigrants is the most sort of obvious. There's a lot of other issues and the retention of Title 42 is it. It's very difficult to know. Let's say there was 15,000 to 18,000migrants there. It's very hard to tell from the news reports how many were allowed to stay in this country and how many were, you know, sort of summarily deported under Title 42. Mm-hmm. I don't think that any of them should have been expelled, but I think it's quite possible that 3/4 of those people were allowed to stay in this country, but the Biden administration is so terrified of the idea that they seem to have, like, from a political standpoint, and it's very difficult to tell from a policy standpoint exactly. I presume the diplomat who resigned is aware of at least, you know, there is more than, you know, one that is being brought back to Haiti who shouldn't, you know, and I think it's quite clear that's a horrible situation for people at this point. But the Biden administration seems to have played this from a political standpoint, put aside for a moment the policy, to piss off everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And I think, I mean, what we are seeing is complete incoherence, I think, in terms of immigration politics. I think the policy is a draconian crackdown,
right?
But the politics are incoherent, because, right. So we agree that one of the more interesting things of the Trump years, I think, was that Americans suddenly, rather suddenly, became broadly more welcoming to immigration. And that some of the biggest popular backlash against Donald Trump that galvanized the most people was his own draconian immigration policies. But for Democrats, it's absolutely a third rail thing where the fear of backlash is driving nearly every decision. Because for them, it's that this is the thing that got Trump elected, right? It turns out if we are, you know, if we're talking about bringing years back, right? Like this is straight back to the 1990s at this point. Yeah. Like it's full on avoid backlash. And then that's what leads to the political incoherence here, right? Because we see the images of the Border Patrol, and the administration says that's unacceptable. These images are unacceptable.
Right.
The thing that they're trying to do.
Outlaw cameras.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The thing that the Border Patrol was out there doing is our policy. But like these images of it going poorly for us, that's, we cannot have that.
Right.
And that's like, that's the, and I don't know. It's, I think as I said, politically completely incoherent, and they can't actually figure out a way to justify it.
And the thing about it, which blows my mind, is that substantively, no matter how draconian they get, the coverage doesn't move. We talked about this on the show the other day. We have the images of the Haitian asylum seekers and the Border Patrol agents that we all saw that are so disgusting. Do you think Tucker Carlson brings that up on his program? Of course, he talks about how the Biden administration actually wants more migrants in this country so we can do his version of a great replacement theory, which is just he wants his viewers to look up great replacement theory, but it's actually the Biden administration is doing it. We can do our own kind of great replacement. Mm. And so it doesn't matter what he does, right? And yet they're still so afraid of backlash when the coverage is going to remain. So when they think about like, oh, this is what got Trump elected.
Yeah.
Those people are always going to be there and they're always going to be energized no matter what you do substantively.
That's exactly right. And I think I've written about this too, that what Democrats who act to avoid right-wing backlash, what they have not yet learned about this moment is that, what is like actual reality no longer figures into what Republicans will make into an issue.
Yeah.
Right. Like there can be a lot of migrants coming to the country or there can be hardly any. Republicans will run the same attack ads either way.
And even I feel like it's even worse than that because the one principal tenet of like the news cycle, right, is how quickly do you resolve the situation? Because you want the news cycle about this. Like, I understand, you know, we don't want to overactivate the right wing base. They're going to lie about it. But how do we wrap this up quickly so there isn't weeks long or days long images or, you know, pegs essentially for them to talk about this.
Right.
We want to, whatever we want to do, we want to wrap this up quickly. And so the quickest thing to do would have been, it seems to me, to choose a side. Mm-hmm. And we know what side voted for you. Mm-hmm. Choose it. You go at light speed and you do, it doesn't matter at that point. You relocate all of these people and you do it at light speed and you make there be at least no controversy on your side of things.
Yep, yep.
Because that's the only side of the controversy that you can mitigate. I'm just talking like from a purely political standpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, never mind. Like, again, I think like what we're seeing is incredibly inhumane. But, you know, to say we're going to let in families, you know, but we're going to maintain Title 42 for the other, for some, you know, segment. It's just like all you're doing is putting fodder, you know, grist for the mill, but like multiple mills.
And what does, what does TV news like? It likes images of chaos. It likes images of disorder. Like the quickest way to get that out of the news cycle is just to settle it, right?
So that's settle it.
Just, and because once, and especially like, an issue like this, when we're talking about the right-wing backlash, not even just like, so if this is just settled, we let people in, we resettle them quickly. TV news, generic TV news moves on because there's no images of chaos anymore. And the right can flip out, but like the thing they will just be flipping out about, again, something with no images to back it up. It'll just be like, they did this thing. And
right.
Won't, like there won't be negative consequences that they can show people, but they'll, right.
And, but it has another impact too, because when it's off the generic television, right? Because we know this is all about negative partisanship. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think like has disappeared over the past couple of days is stuff like Florida contemplating getting rid of vaccine mandates, not for COVID, but for things like measles and everything else. Like, were it not for the right being able to make this, issue about immigrants and the mainstream media making it about immigrants and the disarray, which is the disarray, the Republicans have managed to get off the front pages their big liability coming out of the California recall, and which is also being deployed in Virginia, which is that they become the party of extending COVID.
Right.
And that narrative is completely subsumed by this notion of like, how are we going to deal with 15,000 new people in our country? We just had 700,000 people who shouldn't have died in the past year. Yeah. We've got room in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, In every circumstance, we can absorb 15,000 immigrants without batting an eye. Particularly now, right? And
we can apply a similar lesson from what's happening with the rest of the Biden agenda here. Because imagine, right? What do you think the news would look like now in late September if the Biden administration had in April rammed through on a purely partisan basis 51 votes in the Senate, its entire agenda in April, just gotten done in April? There would not now be endless news cycles about how extreme this agenda was, how the moderates hate it, how the Senate can't get anything done, right? And it's the same with all these other things, where if you rip the Band-Aid off and do the thing that you are afraid of doing because of backlash, like, it will pass, it will happen and pass. And then, you know, I'm not saying like, oh, the news would be all like roses for Joe Biden at this point, but like, it would be talking about different things.
They would be talking about the subpoenas that are being issued for January 6th. They'd be talking about this guy Eastman, who was a top Republican lawyer, essentially providing like a political roadmap to overturning the election. Mm-hmm. They would be talking about Donald Trump. I mean, the advantage would be with the Democrats now. They would have pocketed this stuff. People would be starting to like, you know, not worry about losing their checks that they're getting $300 per kid in January, but they'd be talking about, I could start making plans for like, you know, the kids are going to do extracurricular things, or, you know, we're going to be able to, they're going to get new shoes, or they're going to get, a Christmas presents this year, or whatever it is. I mean, I can start planning on getting those, you know, my toothache taken care of because Medicare is going to be kicking in, expanding benefits soon. I mean, it is so frustrating. And again, like, I wish it was as explainable as they just really don't want to do this. And the point is, like,
it's not.
It's not like Joe Biden got elected, you know, because it was, you know, his infrastructure proposals. There was nobody on the left who was like thinking that Joe Biden was going to do this, but they thought they were going to be able to do it.
Yep.
They thought it was important. They put it out. This is not their plan. It's just that we have incredibly incompetent leadership in the Democratic Party. And, you know, God bless Chuck Grassley. Apparently, I think, you know, the sense is that it would have been easier for the Democrats to maybe, or the Republicans have to put more resources into Iowa if Chuck Grassley wasn't going to run.
88 and going strong.
Mm-hmm. That dude's going to be...
He's going to be 89 next year in September, right before his election.
So he's going to be 95 in the Senate.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yes, he could be 95 in the Senate.
He might be 90. I mean, senators, you know, especially the worst ones, they tend to live a long time.
I wonder if, like, they said to Grassley, like, the best thing, like, we need you for Iowa, but what we also really need you for is because when you run, Dianne Feinstein's going to go, like,
that's what I'm saying. Nobody tell her about this, although I guess it wouldn't really matter if you told her anyway.
Apparently, she would forget the next day. And
I think an underrated reason that, like, that octogenarian senators run for reelection is they don't want to change their pharmacy.
Right. Have you seen? I'm not leaving until Medicare actually has expanded.
Like their caretaker in DC.
I mean, this is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, really, it is. Yeah.
A major problem.
I mean, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, what do you do about this generation of political leadership? Like, what do we can't do anything about it. You know, they're holding the country and the world hostage. And they can't be reasoned with.
No.
I don't know.
It really is. It really is stunning. I mean, there's such a sort of like tragic quality to this that you have like half a dozen.
So what's funny is that like here we are on the left criticizing the moderates. But what we're criticizing them for is not having any strategy for holding power themselves after this term. Like what we are saying is you are not acting in your own best interest.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's no, this is a competence question. And I think it is easy and not necessarily sort of irrational to be on the outside and assume that it's not possible for this level of incompetence to exist, that there must be a secret plan that they're operating under and their agenda must be like a hidden agenda. And they're playing like, you know, triple level chess with us and we just can't see it. But I can tell you, like, you know, when I have worked in any type of like corporate setting, any type of like, it is impossible to really articulate how much incompetence exists mm-hmm. amongst the people who tend to be in positions of decision making because the skill set to attain these levels is different than the skill set that is needed to actually do these things correctly. Mm-hmm. And you know, people could cite Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell has an easier job in many respects, mm-hmm. which is, well, I'm not going to do anything. Like, you know, like, my agenda is so limited here that I only have to do, you know, it's like literally like I have one job to do, and that is just gum up the works. And there's, you know, there's always like 25 ways of making a machine break down. There's only one way to make it work. You know, you give me a car and, you know, tell me to fix it. I can break that car in like, you know, I got to just like start unscrewing stuff and, much easier than I can, you know, even fix a fan belt for that matter.
Right.
And I feel like that is, you know, what we're facing right now. And I am really, just sort of flummoxed as to how that gets fixed other than just sort of waiting for a generation that I think has even more than the normal amount of incompetence because their incompetence is also mixed with a complete sort of disassociation from changes that have taken place in our society mm-hmm. that I think at least the younger people, politicians at least seem to have an awareness of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's absolutely. Even like younger politicians that I don't particularly like or agree with, I think have a much more realistic sense of sort of facts on the ground in this country. And I think that probably more of, and I would hope are more realistic about Democrats' chance of continuing to hold power in the medium term. Because I think those chances are very slim and getting slimmer every day. And you would think a party that was facing the loss of Congress and the further loss of the courts in terms of the Supreme Court would be pulling their hair out over it. And they're not.
Breyer's sitting cozy and cool, by the way, speaking of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Book tour to do. Yeah. So you don't want to be a former judge and do that book tour. But at least he doesn't, it's not about politics for him.
Yeah.
So, all right, here's an example. Well, I got somebody, St. Paul. Dem leadership's principal concern is killing any progressive movement. Once you understand that, you see they are not incompetent. But that's not their principal concern, right? Their principal concern is their own benefit.
Their own.
Yeah.
And, are not perfectly aligned. I mean,
I don't think that, right. I think you can believe that about Democratic leadership, that they are committed to demobilizing, mass organizations. They are committed to that. Right. But that has nothing to do with their inability to pass a damn infrastructure bill.
Right. No,
it's
just quickly, they're convinced also that killing progressive movements is to their electoral benefit.
Yeah, too. Yeah, that too. But right.
But the bottom line is, if they didn't want the $3.5 trillion bill to pass, if they didn't want any of these provisions to pass, there's an easier way to do that. Not win the election.
Yeah.
Right.
And then not try to pass it.
Right, like, exactly.
The thing we're watching them do right now, and I think this is kind of breaking some brains. The thing we're watching them do is like, not try to sink something, but try to get something done.
Right.
And we're seeing them not be very good at it.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, if their agenda was to just get rid of the salt taxes, they could have just done that.
And then just been done.
We would just be sitting here complaining, but we wouldn't be talking about their level of competence.
Right.
They would just have done it. And that's it. I mean, they're trying to do something here. They certainly don't want too much progressive influence in it. But like, even if it's just like, shore up the ACA. I mean, they're not able to do that either. Mm-hmm. It really is absolutely stunning in many respects. And I wanted to actually just touch on your podcast about Lyme.
We got
30 seconds. Give me the show. Because I've known about this Lyme vaccine for a long time. I've spent a decent amount of time in one of the counties that is like the biggest Lyme. I know dozens of people who have gotten Lyme disease, and I knew there was a vaccine, and I heard there's a new one coming out in a year or two.
Yeah.
But the old one is a perfect example of like, there's a lot of medical innovation that we would have, except for it's just not good for venture capitalists.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So the most recent episode of our podcast, Apologies for Everything, was about this Lyme vaccine that was approved in the 90s called Lymerix. It was mostly effective, but because Lyme disease was much less widespread back then, it was not treated as a huge priority by the FDA, for example, which only made it gave it a level of approval that didn't shield its manufacturer from lawsuits. There were mostly frivolous lawsuits filed about its safety. The manufacturer voluntarily pulled it from the market, not because they were ordered to, not because it was proven unsafe, but just because they thought, well, so few people will take this vaccine, it's not worth the risk. So check it out. And like you say, we also talk about how future vaccines and also other types of preventative treatments are in the works. But it was a really interesting subject.
And just by listening to that podcast, actually, you get injected with 4G, I think.
Exactly, yeah.
Alex Perrin, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll put a link to Alex's podcast and writing in our description today. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. So that is that's where we're at this this week. On Monday, we're going to see the Republicans filibuster the debt ceiling. I just can't even believe, and we didn't even get into it with Alex. I can't even believe that we're still talking about the debt ceiling.
Yeah,
that's completely out of, that to me is just insane.
I feel like I'm reading Ezra Klein on an RSS feed talking about the debt
ceiling. Exactly. Exactly. This is, it's like Throwback Friday, I guess. I don't know.
Throwback
Friday. Folks, if you're watching us on Peacock, we will say goodbye and have a great weekend.
See you Monday for the infrastructure vote, question mark?
There you go. And for those of you who are watching us everywhere else, well, ladies and gentlemen, do we have a theme song? Ladies and gentlemen, it is with a joyous and buoyant heart that I introduce our next guest.
What's coming on here? Come on, start the video, Andy.
There he is.
You were scared. I know you're always scared with me. Is he going to be able to unmute himself? Will he find the video, start video button?
That's ages.
That's true. Thank you, Emma.
You're welcome.
And I think the first step to overcoming it is that you acknowledge it. You acknowledge it.
No, you can't go around home. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot. And he believes Obama
could never be wrong.
Yeah. And I can't laugh.
Yeah.
.com. You made me laugh so hard. I had to
give your own theme song. And it can laugh.
Beautiful.
Andy, wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
Deal with one issue that we have. Well, we have two now. The first being, who is Andy D? Why does your Zoom say Andy D?
Okay, look.
There it is.
I play some online poker. No, I don't really. It's the reason why it's that is alias. It's an alias.
Nailed.
So I'm hiding. It's like when I stop the video, you get that. Andy D. Andy D.
We can't see that. But why?
Because I'm so well known now, Sam. You know, I'll come on your show.
Right.
But a lot of times I will like to be a fan on, I like to listen to a lot of sports talk shows.
So wait a second. Zoom into sports talk shows to listen, but you don't want anybody to know that it's Andy Kindler?
That doesn't sound plausible. So, I cannot remember what that was. Maybe it was from some hilarious bit I was doing. I do Andrew Cuomo. So maybe it was from one of those.
Here's the other thing I want to ask you. Okay, so you're trying to be anonymous, and maybe we don't feel comfortable in discussing.
Please call me Andy D for the rest of the.
What context that you would try and feel anonymous? I honestly can't imagine. Like there are Zoom situations, but
I'll tell you where.
Let me just ask you this, and you know that how
you mean the best, and you love me,
and how much high regard I hold you.
But I don't see that at all, right, Emma?
What is the scenario that if you're Andy D, people are like, oh, that's just some rando. But if you're Andy K, people are like, wait a second. Is that Andy Kindler?
That looks not like Andy Kindler, but it says Andy D.
Yeah, it says Andy D. We don't see him. The video is. But Andy K, is that possibly Andy Kindler?
Here's my problem. I want to be recognized everywhere. So I play these little games with the public.
I see.
They go, is that Andy Kindler? And I'll bring it up too. Like I'll say, yeah, of course, in my profession, when I was on Everybody Loves Raymond, and they go, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait a second. is that Andy Kindler?
I see what
I said. Yes, please respect my privacy.
So if I understand what you're saying, that the reason why you go on to these Zoom calls that where there's no video and you put Andy D is so that you can sit back and go, the reason why I'm not being recognized as being Andy Kindler is because it's not Andy K.
You peel the onion back.
In fact, if I put Andy Kindler on there, if I wasn't recognized, it wouldn't be because I'm not.
It would hurt your feelings. You're protecting yourself, Andy.
I see what you're saying.
I thank people everywhere, in doctor's offices everywhere, for not coming up to me. You know what I'm saying? For allowing me to have my own life. That's why I moved to L.A. many years ago, so I could live here anonymously.
So the receptionist goes, I'm sorry, could you spell that? And you go, K-I-N-D-L-E-R. And then she goes, okay. And you go, and thank you for being so low-key about it.
Exactly. I do that a lot on the phone. And thank you, Verizon wireless agent. representative. Thank you.
For staying off.
Yes. For
that. I do that.
Make me feel better. I feel more. I don't have to be on. That's what I tell her. Andy D doesn't have to be on. Andy D's more like, hey, yeah. I just wanted to say I agree and then some. You're doing a great job out there. Wait a second. Is that Andy Kindler? No. Sorry. Thanks a lot. Gotta go.
Whoa.
And can't stay.
Can I also just say that was a rather humble way of showing us your range when it comes to doing voices.
You mean the guy from New York?
Yeah.
The Italian guy from New York?
That was pretty good.
or the Jewish guy from New York. Yay. Yeah. I listen to Howard Stern and I'm from the island. Hey, I'm an Italian. I'm Andy D, the Italian guy from Brooklyn.
There you go. All right.
Hey.
I'm glad we resolved that.
I'm Andrew Cuomo. Let me tell you something. Perhaps, Sam, I'm too respectful of women. I come from a small Italian village called Senza Sanciando. And we loved women so much, when we would greet a woman, we would have to stick our hands halfway.
All right, let's.
We had to touch because I love women so much. I had to grab them by the finchinjo. I'm allowed to do this because I'm Jewish a little bit, right? So I could do the Italian thing. It doesn't seem as insulting.
Right. Exactly. And of course, Andy, you're not just Jewish, but you're black and you're gay. And you, man, and you are a woman.
I'm not white, though. I'm not white, though, according to the alt. And as I'll never forget, the first time I heard alt-right in that movie, Days of Confused. alt-right. But I'm not no longer white.
Yeah,
your McConaughey is right. a little.
Oh, that's weak?
Yeah.
Oh, just because I don't do the voice?
You're a little too New York.
Can we, since you went there, let's talk about Chris Cuomo for a moment, shall we? I don't know if you've seen this.
Do I want you to ask me about Chris Cuomo? Yes. Is there a reason why I'm bringing up this topic? Yes. Do I always ask myself the question that leads to the obvious answer? Yes. Because I'm Chris Cuomo.
Can we put up? Do we have the article? You saw this op-ed, right?
I don't think
you're about this.
No, I'm out of the loop.
Okay, all right, we should say
working on my book.
California is on the West Coast. Andy is working on his book. So when he gets up at 4 a.m. after his jog and rowing crew in the L.A. Canal, he hasn't gotten to his New York Times yet. There is a op-ed written by a former ABC and CBS executive producer, a woman named Shelley Ross, who at one point was Chris Cuomo's boss at ABC News. This is about 20 years ago, 2005. And In 2005, there was a going away party for somebody at CNN or something. She was no longer Chris Cuomo's boss. And according to her op-ed, Chris Cuomo came in and sort of grabbed her, hugged her, and squeezed her butt. And then and she was sitting there, you know, I guess her husband saw it. I mean, there would have been a need for confirmation, except for the fact that, like, Cuomo writes an hour or two later, or maybe after the party or whatever, let's put up the email. She has the email, and it really is an amazing email. Like, I first saw only the subject line.
I am so, my heart's almost ready to stop from what could be happening between people.
Oh God.
So the subject line is, now that I think of it, I'm ashamed. And when I heard that, I was like, you know, all right, good for him.
He's coming clean. He sounds like a guy, if you watch his show, Chris Cuomo coming to you live 360, he sounds like he's ready to get it off his chest.
And it occurs to me, okay, well, I mean, obviously you don't do that, and you're in my opinion, you're a bit of a creepy scumbag to do that. But if you come back an hour later with, like, I'm ashamed and I apologize, maybe you have some, like, sort of self-awareness, and you're like,
here comes the chagrin is what we're hoping.
And but then the email starts to really undercut it very quickly. He says, though
I haven't read, I'm like a kid on Christmas or Hanukkah morning. I'm not reading ahead.
Right. So he says, I'm ashamed. And then immediately,
though,
offers like an alibi, an excuse. Though my hearty greeting was a function of being glad to see you. In other words, I didn't mean anything by it. It was just my sheer exuberance. I hug people. I mean, who does this remind you of?
Yeah.
I kiss Joe Biden.
Perhaps I am too respectful.
And then ... he goes into, Christian Slater got arrested for a...
Under the bus. Christian Slater goes under the bus. One paragraph later.
For a parentheses, kind of similar act.
Right.
And then parentheses, though born of an alleged negative intent, unlike my own.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a monster like Christian Slater here.
Oh, that piece of shit, Christian Slater.
Well, yeah. What's amazing here is that he is like, he's delivering the subtext, which is like, I might get in trouble for this. And, and let me just make it absolutely clear that I shouldn't get in trouble for this.
He wants it in writing, but he's like, can't stop just trying to exonerate himself. That's super clumsy.
And then he says, and these are just like, also, like, where did he learn to write English? Because let's just drop out the parentheses, which
so
are all these mitigating.
So many ellipses.
Christians,
why does he need that many ellipses? Seriously. Yeah.
Because
he was charged for the ellipses. Believe me, you wouldn't see so many.
Yeah.
And he's at Disney. That's what I love.
Then he says, and as a husband, I can empathize with not liking to see my wife patted as such.
Patted as such. That sounds like respect. Very respect.
Also, well, and it's so nice that he's empathizing with the husband.
Husband.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. You basically.
There's a husband who's.
Yeah. I can imagine if someone came and branded my cattle without my permission. Like, you know, yeah, I can empathize with a ranch owner who would see their cattle get branded with the Lucky Star Ranch thing, not their ranch.
It's nice that he's acknowledging at least that he has the inability to empathize with a woman.
Exactly.
No, but as a husband, when I play the husband role in my head, in my Chris Cuomo head, I can empathize.
I want to put this together without the ellipses so that we get like just how sort of twisted this is. Though my hearty greeting was a function of being glad to see you, ...
That's so terrible.
Christian Slater got
what, is he a dog?
For a kind? Act. And as a husband, I can empathize with not liking to see it as such. So let me make this clear. I was happy to see you. but I don't want to get arrested. And I can imagine how upset your husband was seeing me grab your ass.
I thought you were kidding. So, and he does pass. That's who he apologizes to.
So pass along my apology to your very good and noble husband.
Thank you, sir.
Chattel.
I appreciate your apology.
I appreciate your recognizing that I am not a cuck and that you should not have taken my chattel in that fashion. Thank you, good sir.
Thank you for restoring my honor, Chris.
Yes.
My nobility remains intact.
Yes.
Thank you, Chris Cuomo.
I can now that you have indicated to my chattel that you meant no offense, I can now look my chattel in the eye and still maintain my dignified position.
I will not request a refund on the dowry.
Exactly. But, to his credit, by line 6, he says, and I apologize to you as well.
Right.
For even putting you in such a position.
I don't even know what that
actual. Wait a second, not for grabbing your ass, but for grabbing your ass in front of your noble husband.
That's right. That was the big mistake.
It's the position I put you in that your husband had to see me grab your ass.
As I tore into you as material that either I or another man owned, I thought for a second, maybe I'm going too far.
I am so sorry that I, in any way...
And I wish your family goodwill to you.
You and your husband. And next time, I will remember the lesson, no matter how happy I am to see you.
Is he happy to see him or just happy to see him? What kind of a monster is this guy?
What is the lesson?
Well, the lesson about Christian Slater and the other one that he learned.
Do you guys think that Christian Slater woke up on LA time with you, Andy, and saw his name trending and was like, oh, my career is getting back on track, and now it's...
I have Emma. Now, wait a second. I guess you didn't see Mr. Rocket Man. That was a good show. He was a Mr. Rocket? Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot. No. Yeah, I mean, he
let's not denigrate Christian Slater's...
I also think, you know...
I'm so sorry.
I don't know why I went there.
Using Christian Slater's, behavior at all. To be honest with you, I don't remember the episode. Robot. Oh, that's a great show. Okay. I don't remember the episode, but I think, you know, I know...
The episode of what?
Slater went through some very difficult sort of substance
issues. I have it here. 2005, Sergeant... Basically, he grabbed a woman's behind on the street, said Doherty, adding Slater was intoxicated at the time. Slater said, I didn't do nothing when he was in the squad car.
Come on. Have you no shame at long last, I say.
But, and so he's bringing up a Slater, and this is, you know, contemporaneous. This happened in 2005, so it was in the news, and so he was a little sensitive. But he's making it seem like this whole thing is just about the husband being there. And
so weird.
So it's like how... So let me doubly insult you. You're just a prop or some type of plaything for me. But let me apologize for saying that I shouldn't have played with you in front of your owner. I mean, it's so
particularly after Christian Slater made it hot to do things like this.
Exactly. And it's like, you know,
Christian Slater did it and no one seemed to.
And one wonders if he's also thinking to himself, like, you know, back in 1950, if I had done this, people would have really been praising me for sending this email, which, of course, email doesn't exist at that time. I mean, he must have been so proud of himself. Look at me.
I think he just wanted, documentation that he apologized and downplayed it significantly.
Yeah, he really should have come up with some of that. Because this sounds, right, this really reads like, first of all, I'll tell you what I shouldn't even be writing you an email to. I should never apologize for something so wonderful that I did to you earlier today. That was a wonderful thing, a blessing to you and your family. But I'm writing because I thought, I saw, maybe if your husband was there and he didn't know and he got knocked out, he could think as I was ripping your dress to get at you. As I ripped through your dress to get at you, I did hesitate for a moment and said, wait a second, we're not in my bedroom.
I appreciate that you're doing Jackie Mason there. I want to say that.
This man, what are the odds that Jackie Mason, what are the odds that, this is actually true, this is a bit from my act. What are the odds that Mel Gibson would actually have been, he was pulled over by a Jewish policeman. What are the odds of that being, it's a fact. I'm not making it up. There's two Jewish policemen in L.A. and Mel Gibson. But how did he know he was Jewish? And here comes the bit. Did he walk up to the car and say, look, Mr. Gibson, do you have any idea how fast you were going, Mr. Gibson? I said to myself, is that the man from the Lethal Weapon movies?
Oh, God.
It's delightful. I'm a throwback in many ways. This is terrible. These Cuomo, I'm less high on the Cuomos now.
Oh, really? Like you've come down? Yeah.
Well, Chris Cuomo, you always felt like he was the funniest of them, of the horrible.
Yeah,
there's just two. Is it just two? Is there a sister?
I think there's a sister.
There's a sister. Yeah, there's a sister.
I like Mario Cuomo. I remember him giving speeches. He could be very
erudite.
Yeah, and what's it, when you get inspiring? He could be inspiring and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and he was against the death penalty. So,
yep.
Boy, did I wrap up? Boy, did I really wrap up that segment? Good.
All right. Well, listen, that was not what we actually wanted.
Why am I doing that? Okay. How good do I look? How good does it look here? Remember the old days?
Give me like 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, that was the other thing I was going to ask you about. Emma's going to step out for a moment because she, Jackie Mason,
you know that she can't take too much of me at once. I so much appreciate that she is so loving towards me, but it's just too much of the old. It's like having the history of the Jews and vaudeville just paraded in front of you.
That's right. It's like heading to the Borscht Belt for a moment, and it's just too much traveling.
What about you? You're just as Jewish.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's the two of us together that makes it too much.
I'm pretending to be upset.
Listen, I want to ask you about the Andy D thing. You answered it. It was an insufficient answer, but that's not important. I now want to ask you.
You always got to put me in a hole, I know this.
I want to ask you, what is going on behind you? Like, what is going on with that table? Like, what is going on there? Like last week, last time we had you, there was nothing there. And now you've taken a table and there is a tablecloth on it covered by plastic.
Can you see this?
That is a picture of you as Elvis, right?
No, that's me. That is me in the show. I'm dying up here. That was me. I played an agent.
No. You're not answering my question, Andy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a picture of you there. Okay. What's everything else? And what is going on that table that you need to put plastic over it?
Oh, that I can't talk about. There's a dead body in the thing. What? In the thing.
What are you
I'm wrong because I dismembered my cousin Saul?
Wait a second.
I say cousin Saul because he was a dentist who tortured me. I said that.
Are you operating on someone? Like, what is going on? Why is
Oh, no, that's just a protective. This is because this is where I do my cameo. It's my cameo studio. There's a lot of things going on here. And we have tours. We have tours that come through.
Why is there plastic on the, like, what is going on?
It looks like a Catholic mass.
Yeah, it's like you've got some type of, like, shrine there. But, like, is there, like.
That's from my. My mom was an antique dealer, and after my parents passed, my brother sent me all these items that, as he said himself, we all checked on the East Coast what was valuable, and we sent you the rest.
There you go. But you're not answering my question. What is the plastic?
Oh, the plastic is because there's no reason for that. There's no reason for that, but there's photographs in that cabinet. That's really why. And we don't want sunlight to get on them.
But
stop making it like it's Dexter over here, and I have dead bodies in the windowsill.
Wait. Is that, like, what is, will you, are there two layers on that table, or is it just one?
This is a cabinet. It's a cabinet.
Oh, I thought that the beige was the plastic, but no, it.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So what is the plastic? Why is there plastic?
My family has not been doing well. I have, as you know from my GoFundMe. get Andy a credenza campaign that I've been trying to
So you're afraid of the
photo? I'm $80 from a credenza, if that's the right word.
So you have photos in the credenza, and you're afraid that your antiques on top of the credenza are going to leak into the photos.
Hey, when you talk to Andy D, do you want to see behind him? All of a sudden, there's a rain shower, and he loses all of his Mickey Mantle baseball cards.
Is there a skylight above there?
No, but there's a window there. I can't show you anything. Not allowed. I'm not even allowed to be online. Shh. Am I your oldest contributor? I could be the senior advisor now.
Oh, you mean are the oldest person who comes on the show?
I'm going to be 65.
No.
In next month.
Eligible for your booster shot, Andy.
Congratulations.
Mm. You don't think that got me for my life? I got a little excitement going.
I think
to look forward to.
All right.
I have to believe that you are, and that, you know, you don't have to comment on this, but I think that you are fraudulently inflating your age to get that booster shot. I do not believe you. You're that age.
Why would you say I'm 60? I am absolutely 65. The man who sold me the ID said I was. No, I'm not lying. I wish I was lying. Yes, you're right. I'm lying. I'm 47. You caught me, Sam.
Bingo. Nailed him.
I can't wait to get that booster. Oh, my God. That's from Baba. That's Perry Mason, right?
Yeah. And then this one.
That's Law and Order.
There you go.
Yeah.
Boy, if that was the trivia game, I'd be like the winner.
So,
what was that? Can I hear it again?
I don't think so.
Oh, I don't know that. I don't think so. Dennis Miller?
Fred Willard.
Oh.
I think it might have been. I can't remember.
Yeah. I didn't know you did a whole bunch of. Do you have a bunch of things like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We hit the big one. Okay, Daddy.
We never use that one.
I saw you down at TJ Cranberry's last week, Sam. That was pretty happening down there.
What I wanted to actually, like, the thing that we had planned to discuss with you, and I don't know if we have time. Should we do it? Do we have time?
What do you mean, do we have time?
Yeah, all right.
What do you have?
When does Andy D have to?
I'm good. I don't have a hard out.
But Andy, I thought you'd appreciate this because you're as everyone knows, you're a huge fan of Sam Harris's.
You said that came out of left field.
You are also an avid viewer of InfoWars with Alex Jones. And of course, you appear with some regularity on this program. Well, what if I was to say to you, Andy, we can bring all of those things together.
I am tingling with excitement.
Well, I noticed a video I was sent this morning. It's titled Sam Harris Trashes Brett Weinstein with Alex Jones Comparisons. I'm not going to play the whole thing from the Majority Report commenting on it.
Pause it for a sec.
They all do their little...
Do we see that he printed out a video?
What he does is he has his staff, and I'm not putting anybody on the spot, guys, print out color images of his computer screen. And they have a camera up above to show that he's actually looking at it.
Right.
That's
one way to watch a video is like... one of those old school animations where you flip through like a flip book. That's how he watches our content so he doesn't get the 5G.
I have a flip book back there somewhere I can find for you.
It is a multimedia experience. Now, what's interesting about this video is he is commenting on a video we did where we listened to a Sam Harris podcast where he was weighing in on the fact that Brett Weinstein has been pushing ivermectin and also being, you know, skeptical of vaccinations.
Yeah, I've been following this whole thing because anytime those they get anytime something like that happens, it's delightful. Like when the Brett guy is now, he claims to be cured or vaccinated with ivermectin is what he's been claiming.
Using ivermectin in a prophylactic manner.
Yes.
And Sam Harris, you know, basically says this is insane, but I'm not going to personally criticize Weinstein because just because you're insane and spreading, I think you'll recall he called my behavior sociopathic when I was mocking Dave Rubin. That's sociopathic. When you promote ivermectin as a prophylactic, despite all...
Right. Look, yeah, exactly.
By one of his viewers dying and promoting his work, dying from COVID, and then he responds to it and basically shrugs it off.
Right. And despite the fact that, like, you're going out there and telling people not to take a vaccine that is clearly saving lives, that's not sociopathic. You don't want to get personal about that. It's only sociopathic when you mock Dave Rubin. So we did a video that basically that was the, and apparently Alex Jones saw it and, or his producers.
Well, what he does now in his life is he just searches his name on YouTube because I did a video about him 2 years ago and he also responded to me about it because Alex Jones just in the title, he doesn't really have a lot going anymore. Trump's not in office. He's out in the cold in that area. So he's just got to kind of put Google alerts on for himself and then comment on it.
The funny part is about this is that he doesn't realize that Sam Harris is not calling into the show. He thinks that we're interviewing Sam Harris. Listen to this. Okay. So just we're playing an audio clip of Sam Harris. And so all of this garbage he's saying up front is because he must have thought that we were interviewing him. Because I've got news for you. We do debate people on this show, and we don't have NPR voices. Play this clip.
Dean, with Alex Jones comparisons. I'm not going to play the whole thing from the Majority Report commenting on it, but they all do their little NPR Ka the Snake voice to put you to sleep, and they talk about science and how we don't debate people.
What?
Both the hosts of this show and the show they're playing try to talk as soft as they can because that's a trick to show you've got such a high IQ. Oh, we don't interview any of these other scientists because they're just a husband and wife team and they're just kooks. And, you know, they'll tell.
I don't think he even watched this clip.
Yes, exactly. He's never seen anything.
It's Sam Harris who goes on the extended thing about how I don't even want to get in a debate with these
people. Yeah. It's yeah.
He guys. Got producer no. notes on it, right.
And the husband and wife team is Brett and Heather on the...
Oh, my God.
So, it's a little difficult to watch a video when you just have printouts of it. So
on the horse paste podcast?
It's on the horse
medicine Dark podcast. Horse paste podcast.
Bad PR month for horses.
But yeah, that's what's happening is his exposure to this video is through producer notes, and he's trying to understand what happened in it, and he's conflating a lot of
He's conflating right a lot of
And he's doing shtick. I think he's just pulling shtick out that he's done before about the NPR people. You know what I mean?
NPR voice. And they
all do the same thing.
Like they're being, you know, thoughtful and won't debate anybody.
I did an Alex Jones impression in that video, I think, actually.
Oh, you did?
I'm pretty sure.
And when we did do NPR voices, it was to mock Sam Harris.
Right. We specifically said, like, their voices are so boring and slow.
Well, they try and mock NPR voices as a way of actually doing NPR voices because they don't. That's the way they try and to lull you into a sleep because they're lizard people. Well, just keep probably playing a little bit more. There's not much to this whole thing.
I love it.
So convoluted. Guys, we're going to need to fill some time today, so just run the whole thing.
People, both the hosts of this show and the show they're playing, try to talk as soft as they can because that's a trick to show you've got such a high IQ. oh, we don't interview any of these other scientists because they're just a husband and wife team and they're just kooks. And, you know, they'll tell you that 14 scientists resigned and it's just a lie. It's made up. Why even respond? So they're lying to you, talking about why they don't debate people because they lie. Meanwhile, overhead shot, please. Before we play this, I'm just going to show you overhead. Some of what's really going on from their own sources.
Overhead
so here,
shot, please.
Here's this majority report talking about it, their NPR voice.
You are. Yeah.
And then here's New York Post article, two senior FDA officials resign over Biden administration booster shot plan. That's the number one and number two. Top two vaccine officials resign from FDA amid political pressure from Biden administration, MSN. Two top FDA officials resign over the Biden administration booster shot plan, and they said don't give it to children.
TV.
And they said that it's probably creating the deadly variants, and they went on and saying Biden's being political.
Boom.
And there's another article out of Newsmax, two FDA officials resign over Biden's booster plan. It was over
that's
more
my
than
stomach.
Politico, FDA panel. So that's the two. Then they voted Saturday 16-2 to say don't have boosters. But these guys don't care. They just say, oh, it's probably a lie. This is just like the fake story that ivermectin overfilled the hospitals and that it was the poison control, 70% of their calls. AP had to retract. They all had to. It wasn't true. Okay?
Okay.
The whole horse pace Oklahoma story. So that's what's going on. And now Biden says they're just going to override all that.
He says that's what's going on. I can't make head nor tail. I was involved in that video. I can't make head nor tail.
Well, he got really confused because when he mentions the husband and wife couple, he is correctly identifying that as Brett and Heather.
Right, who do the Dark Horse podcast.
And then Sam Harris saying he won't have them on because he's saying that we said the thing about the FDA thing, but that's from Sam Harris about like the, because Sam Harris, did you hear about these FDA ministers?
Right.
Meanwhile, Sam Harris, if you've listened to anything, it's unbelievable. He's like making fun of the word. He thinks the word woke. He says it like it's an insult. I don't know if you're woke, or if you. I'm sure you, but you know, safe spaces,
right?
My friend Ina, who has.
I guess they wanted to respond to Sam Harris, but needed a visual. I don't understand why.
Yeah, that might be a good.
Okay. Look, is there any way that we can get can you print out the podcast so that we can do the overhead shot? Is there any type of visual associated with that, or is it just his logo? All right, then give me the video. give me the video of the audio so I can show something with it, because I've spent way too much on the overhead cam. I need to be able to depreciate it, and so I need to use it.
Do we have that Brett Weinstein tweet about the provolaxis that we can put up?
Oh, I love
it. Oh, yeah.
These guys double down, triple down, quadruple down, and
so this
would be a times four of that.
This is a tweet thread by a user, Health Nerd, who goes through the study about ivermectin that the Dark Horse Paste podcast based their entire promotion of ivermectin on. Put up the tweet that Brett Weinstein had that was a screen grab, and also do it over overhead camera for me too.
Yeah, give me overhead cam.
Put this up. Look at what this guy said back in June. I know this is difficult to accept. The implications of it are both beautiful and horrifying.
Psycho.
Ivermectin is a near perfect COVID prophylactic. I'm sorry and you're welcome. I mean both. And I don't think they can be disentangled in this case because of some I don't even know what he's saying there. Like, I know this is it's so revealing.
Well, there was a study that came out that they had to back off of.
Oh, well, this is the study. Study is, like, this Health Nerd guy goes through in a tweet thread about the level of garbage that this study he's sort of like, I think we should be wary of this study. I mean, it's relentlessly bad. All the data points it brings up. But think about what Brett Weinstein's saying in his tweet, which is, I am dropping such a concussive truth bomb on you. What is going on now is like you've seen the Matrix. This is the real world Matrix, which is why I'm both like sorry to tell you this And
you're welcome
overjoyed
for enlightening
because
you.
I have shattered your world, not just your worldview, but I have shattered your conception of everything around you. Like, you thought gravity was real. I'm sorry, you've been living a lie. But the beautiful truth is, you can fly. and this is like God complex. Crazy talk. Yeah.
Well, this is the evergreen guy, right? This is the evergreen guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, this guy has been setting himself up for this kind of.
Yeah.
This is like a really horrible result of these people should never have any kind of show that they're talking on.
Exactly.
You know? And now they're all the way down the highway and they can't get off the thing.
Well, yeah. And now you just gave a peg for all those like Michael Tracy's Andy Kindler and promoting deplatforming again. And the funny part is those guys, Heather and Brett, they talk about talking about NPR. We're going.
They have those voices. Yeah.
Deliver complete insanity now, but we're going to say it in such a way that we could say it on any platform.
Right.
Like, we're about to rock your world. You're going to find out that everything's a lie, except, of course, what we tell you.
Well, they're faux academics is what it is, right?
I mean, yeah, they have no... They're significant... Like, their publication history is very, like, lacking. But I also want to point out, Sam Harris called out Joe Rogan for that. And he did so with justification. Episode 1671, Brett Weinstein and Dr. Pierre Corey. 57 minutes into that episode is where Brett suggests prophylactic use of ivermectin could end the pandemic if we wanted to do so.
Mm.
If we wanted to do so, which implies something, you know.
Right.
Alongside Dr. Pierre Corey, who then speaks of up to 100% protection if taken weekly. Now, if you search Pierre Corey, you'll find that in August, he got COVID.
But he wanted it. He was doing an experiment.
He said he probably just didn't do the ivermectin dosage.
Right.
Exactly right.
He didn't time it on the exact weekly schedule.
I'm going out and telling people to take ivermectin weekly, and I just forgot to do it during the pandemic.
I didn't quite nail it, but anyway.
He was probably a little distracted as he was shitting his intestinal lining.
Did Pierre Corey not want to end the pandemic? I thought he was, yeah.
I was cash about it.
If anybody doesn't want their vaccines, I'm doubling up on pneumonia. I'm taking everything. Whatever you guys don't want, I'll take the shingles vaccine again. I am so into vaccines that it could be a problem for me.
I'm thinking about getting the shingles vaccine.
I did get it. You can ask me I know you're way younger than me, but you can ask me, there's a lot of things like how do you avoid the AARP mailings? You know, there's a lot of techniques over the next couple of years.
Well, I appreciate that because it's not.
I've got a senior discount at a party pot shop.
AARP mailings, incidentally. I should tell you that right now.
I got a senior 15% discount now at pot shops.
Nice.
Oh,
nice.
That's nice.
Andy, on that note.
That should not be the closer. I'm not really excited about the early bird special. Guys, I got the early bird special at Zookies.
Mr. D.
You guys are so wonderful. Let me tell you something right now. You guys, and I say guys, I don't mean guys. I mean...
Sure, I'm fine with you guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You make me happy.
Yeah, you make us happy, Andy Dick. Right.
Who?
Andy
Dick.
Oh,
that's right. You found out. I happen to appear as Andy Dick on several shows.
Have you seen Andy Kindler and Andy Dick in the same room at the same
time?
Yeah,
actually, I have.
You have. You've paid both of us.
I have.
He's contracted both of us.
I have, yes. In fact, I have. But it was fleeting. It was very fleeting. Andy Kindler.
God bless both of you, or secular.
Co-host of Thought Spiral.
Yes, please listen to Thought Spiral, and which was just named greatest podcast in Shanghai by the online podcast magazine board. And also top on the chart on iTunes.
iTunes.
Ah.
There you go.
Is he still on iTunes?
I
I don't know if you've ever, and you would have no reason to, ever looked at the, Andy, of course, was a star of Who's the Caboose, among other things that he's done in his career. But if you look at the Who's the Caboose trailer on for iTunes, it's a bit of a disaster. But I do also iTunes thing. It was one of my sort of like conceptual ideas that, you know, was very funny to me. And no one else got, and it was, which is a polite way of saying it wasn't funny.
Is it a separate trailer from like the regular Who's the Caboose trailer?
It is the Who's the Caboose trailer, but I decided to make it like a, like it's almost like a sequel to Who's the Caboose, but it's only like 90 seconds long. And it was just, I can't even, I'm not even gonna explain it, but the iTunes thing, I think you'd appreciate it.
I will see it.
Andy, what else can we plug?
That's it. That is it.
Thoughts? Everybody Loves Raymond on Netflix.
Oh, I'm the voice of Mort on Bob's Burgers.
Oh, in the movie. We're both in the movie.
That's right. We're both in the movie.
When's the movie coming out?
That I don't know.
I know. I know.
When's it coming out?
2022. And it's got a very, very good release date, is my understanding.
Summer?
I don't know if I'm at liberty to say.
Oh. Sue, you really have this kind of like higher up who can't tell us vibe.
He likes to pretend like he knows what he's talking about so he can project some type of knowledge. That's the way they just do it, like NPR.
Jeez, it's demonic to hear that come out of you.
Thank you. All right, Andy Kindler. As
can I just tell you something? I mean, I have to tell you something. I'm leaving now. But my goddamn Siri just came on and said, is there something else I can help you with while you were closing with something? I have no idea. What is the point of this ridiculous contraption?
Hey, Siri.
Hey, Siri. Hey, Siri, what's your game?
All right, Andy.
You just said, as always, a pleasure.
We will put a link. We will put a link to. It's true. We'll put a link to a Thought Spiral in our podcast description today, Andy. As always, a huge pleasure.
Love you guys.
Mwah.
Folks,
never done that before.
That like very very odd.
It's fucking Friday.
Liberace.
Yeah.
folks. Your support makes this show possible. You can help this show thrive and survive by becoming a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. We're going to go with Freebie Friday.
Whoa.
Yep. We've already gone past this thing, so everybody's going to get a freebie today just to give you a taste of the fun half. I mean, in some way, when we have Andy on, it really is a taste of the fun half. I mean, so this is sort of like a double taste. One that actually you probably get too much of. So it's probably a mistake.
When Andy comes on now, I feel like we've got to have Feldman on soon.
Yes, that's true. And with Judy Gold, too. It's been too long for Judy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why.
The last time we had Judy on was that when we had Shrimp Josh, the Trump impersonator, on.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, James Austin Johnson, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was the hardest I've laughed in quite a while.
That was funny. Oh, my God, I forgot about that. Folks, I got something to announce. Over 4,000 of your fellow listeners to this program are now on the Majority Report Discord at majoritydiscord.com. 4,000 people in this community. Resource, like debating, questioning, connecting. Go to majoritydiscord.com. Sign up. It is free, just like our app at majorityapp.com. Just like free things, like other things that are free. Check out Nomi Show, youtube.com. The Nomiki Show. And the Nomiki Show. And Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian
just pick one
podcast universe? I mean, audio, but you know what I'm saying. Media.
So this weekend we have for patrons a Left Reckoning, patreon.com/Left Reckoning. We're talking with Dominique Remy about the Texas abortion stuff. and how horrifying it is, and also a little bit about her film on the sort of intersectional implications of just giving birth, and particularly in America. So that's for patrons, patreon.com/leftreckoning, and I'm going to try to get a Literary Hangover episode up. If not this weekend, I'm going to record it this weekend and put it out next week. So Literary Hangover listeners, look up for that.
What should we go into here? Do we want to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene? I don't know. God. I really don't know.
I don't know either. Well, I guess we could... Let's play seven.
Okay.
Let's do the meme.
This is the biggest fundraiser in the Republican Party. And, I mean, increasingly... And look... In 2006, I wrote a book saying that the Republican Party was not your father's Republican Party and that these people were going off the rails. So this is not a new revelation to me, but I am finding that lately, I am finding myself saying, these people, this country is bat crap crazy.
Right.
I mean, the thing about Marjorie Taylor Greene that really captures what the Republican Party is about, she is the biggest fundraising Republican in the party at this point.
Yep.
She sits on no committees.
No committees. She has no power.
She can do no legislation. She is probably, arguably, in terms of her role as a congressperson, the least powerful congressperson there is, just almost definitionally.
But you cannot measure the power that owning the libs has. Sam.
Well, that it is actually ka-ching. Here's number seven.
Because America is only safe when Congress is out of session. But unfortunately, Congress is in session. So let's tell the truth about what's happening. You see, this is a simple meme that you would find on the internet, but this meme is very real. The Green New Deal surprise serves China and China only.
Mm. You can go ahead
and put number one up. So today, talking about the Green New Deal and the all-out war on the men and women who built this country, which is definitely happening every single day here in Congress.
All right. So there's a couple of things about this. They just passed a defense bill that provides $25 billion more annually.
More than what they asked for.
That is... When we compare it to, let's say, the infrastructure bill, we're talking about $250 billion above what the Pentagon asked. They asked for what would be, if you were going 10 years out, because that's the way that people talk about numbers, $7 trillion, actually closer to $7.3 trillion over the course of 10 years. And they added, like, you know what?
We need a sweetener.
We're doing one of those things where it's like, we know you asked for this, but we want you to really enjoy yourself. And so here's an extra $250 billion. And it's stunning. There is, there was 181 Democrats. Out of what? There's like 219 and 135 Republicans out of like 216 or something, mm-hmm. Who voted for the bill. $768 billion, $7.7 trillion over the course of 10 years. We should always talk about that, because why is the infrastructure bill not $350 billion a year over, but instead it's a $3.5 trillion.
Right,
so
right.
Let's do this. It is $7.68 trillion. In fact, I mean, let's be clear, this thing grows every year.
Yes.
So it's probably closer to
$8
trillion.
Congress consistently overshoots the ask, and this happens regularly, of the Pentagon.
But
we want to make sure you feel real special.
There's good news. They were able to secure the requirement that women register for a potential military draft. But my point in bringing it up in the context of Marjorie Taylor Greene, that somehow funding the new green technology, which incidentally, let's be clear, is going to dominate the world markets in the years to come. Even if we're too late to stop global warming, people are going to try at one point when the crap really hits the fan. And so you would think that we would want to compete with China, but it's twisted in such a way that this just helps out China in some bizarre fashion. But
because China is scary because they're Chinese.
But this this bill, Representative Mike Rogers of Alabama, added that the bill is laser focused on preparing our military to prevail in a conflict with China.
This is so silly. Like the entire Matt, did you want to go? No, the Biden just introduced a new military strategy that's a pivot to China. He just made a deal with Australia so that there can be nuclear submarines, nuclear powered submarines within a close proximity to China in order to ramp up this military conflict, Cold War type escalation. If anything, Biden is being incredibly needlessly antagonistic towards China. But like back to the ridiculousness of Marjorie Taylor Greene. This is all conservatives are at this point. We talk about how all of these conservatives get their anti-mask talking points from memes, right? You know, if you can't stop a fart with a diaper, how can you stop COVID with a mask? That's just a widely circulated Facebook meme. And it's the same thing that she puts up there. She knows exactly who she's speaking to.
Yeah, but she said this meme is real.
The way that she says, this is just a simple meme, such that you would find on the internet, reminds me of, what's his name?
Ted Stephen? Oh, no, okay, go ahead.
What's Eastbound and Down guy, the pitcher?
Danny McBride.
Yeah, it's like, this is just a simple meme, such that you'd find on the internet. Like, what
are you... Yeah, well, did you see that other one she put up? She put up a second one, or a third one. Do you have that, Bradley?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, she also put this up, which I thought was, like, ridiculous, but,
Also, they have the USSR flag with...
Oh, that was good. That's a good one. That's what really strikes fear into the heart of China.
Right.
Sam is Thanos.
This is just a thing. But honestly, this China, it is amazing to me how and how much ground has been chewed up by neoconservatives. I've told this story before, but Janine Garofalo and I in 2004 had Gary Hart on the program. And there was a commission set up in the, I think it was the early spring of 2001 to talk about the primary threats to U.S. security. And it was Gary Hart, and I can't remember the other former senator who chaired it. And they had about 20 people on the committee. And they went around the table. What's the number one security threat to the United States? I don't know if anybody at that point had said, you know, global warming, but it was mostly non-state actors. And one person said, China. Everybody was like, well, that's weird. And then they went around again a couple months later. Same person says China, and everybody's like, we don't think so. And that person never came back to another meeting. And that person's name was Liz Cheney. And this has been a neoconservative project, I am quite convinced, since the early 90s, when with the fall of the Soviet Union.
Yep.
And that I'm not convinced that Iraq wasn't in some way a way for these neocons. I mean, there's some ancillary benefits that they may have had, you know, Halliburton and whatnot, but a way to basically control the spigot so that China did not have access to this fuel to fuel their economy and to perhaps, you know, and we are just, they have been in a, what appears to be a long-term project to get into a Cold War with China.
enthusiastically aided and abetted by Joe Biden at this moment. And
exactly.
Yeah. The anti-China bill that was passed in the Senate was Chuck Schumer's project for a few years at this point. So we're seeing a lot of, but of course, that's what gets bipartisan support, right? It passed a 60-vote threshold, and it did pass the Senate in June, I think. Democrats are not immune from drumming up these kinds of new Cold War conflicts.
It's amazing to me how much that has been sort of adopted. I mean, Barack Obama in 2012, was it 2012, mocked Mitt Romney, if I remember correctly, when Romney said our biggest... now, with that said, Obama was overseeing the pivot to Asia. And on some level, I do think that certainly Obama at the time perceived China to be an economic threat, although I don't even understand what that means. Like, our economies are so intertwined and so dependent on each other.
Well, they just start like smelling their own farts. They think that, oh, we need to have some sort of adversary here. And that, like, that is drummed up by specific interests.
The amazing thing, too, is that if you were actually genuinely concerned about China as a rival economically, why don't we have some type of industrial policy so that our supply lines are not so deeply, deeply reliant on China? Like, there is, if you genuinely believe that, and I think there is some validity to the concern, at least in the context of our supply lines, we should have access to our own, capacity to develop computers or to phones or...
Well, that was part of the Schumer bill, but the larger part, I think, is using this rivalry to further escalate conflict in regions that can be seen as...
To pay
battlegrounds
off Boeing.
And then have proxy battles for Chinese / communist influence in X country, which is what we did throughout the entire 1900s in the Middle East and other areas. And they want to continue that entire project. It helps capital. That's the whole reason.
It is such a payoff. Matt.
Romney said it about Russia.
Oh, Russia. He said Russia at the time. Okay. Sorry.
Did Obama say climate change?
I don't think so. I think Russia was he was laughing about, which explains why Obama was doing that Asian the pivot to the Pacific. Matt, here's a question for you. Who do you expect would if you needed, let's say, jets for our military, what entity in the U.S. government would you listen to?
This is like the jets that fly.
Yes.
I would guess the Air Force.
Correct. Well, Congress decided the Air Force was wrong in the number of Boeing F-15EX jets. And so they doubled the number.
Ah.
You asked for 12, wrong. You need 24.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's so generous, right? It's like they're just stocking the honeymoon suite for the Air Force. It's you get champagne and chocolate-covered strawberries.
You know, when the Taliban was taking over all that military equipment, the Republicans are like, we're wasting all this military equipment, and, you know, you want, like, some kind of argument against spending here, right? Which I guess I'm kind of breaking my brain trying to even understand how they were trying to make that work.
I know it. Let's go to the IMs. It was, in fact, Russia, not China. I mean, you remember when...
Sarah Palin, I can see Russia from my house.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Sam, when it is my birthday, now that we've talked about these extra jets, you'll know what to get me.
Emma, what do you want for your birthday? I don't know, just something. Well, you're getting 24 jets. Well, you want the Jets? You're going to get the Giants.
Well, that's that we get.
There you go.
Unfortunately. Hello. Yeah. Well, we get a Shit, I had something to say and I forgot. Oh, that's from the Peacock budget. That's how we're able to buy the Jets.
That's right. The extra Jets.
That's why we sold out.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about Charlie Kirk. Does anybody remember the Minutemen? We've talked to, I think, Dave Nywert on this. He did a deep dive into the Minutemen, who were basically these vigilantes on the border. Right-wingers.
It's like a UMass. It's the UMass.
Yes.
This is the more recent Minutemen.
Here's Charlie Kirk trying to stumble around in the dark and find how we could develop this this sort of right wing paramilitary.
Of course, that's a lie. We know that's not true. We have pictures of people that have pieces of paper that says, "Please help us. I do not speak English. What bus do I need to take? Thanks for your help." As they get released into the interior of the United States. Bill Malusian is saying they are releasing entire family units into the United States.
Pause it for 1 second.
Some people are saying I'm being too...
Referring to the reports that Haitians immigrants have been allowed to stay in this country and presumably to be processed through to see if they're eligible for temporary protected status. I like how he says family units as opposed to just families or even human beings.
Well, they're family paramilitary units.
Exactly. They are sleeper cells.
Being released into the interior, which means the heart.
The heart.
If they're on the coast, we could push them into the ocean. But when
they're in the interior.
When they're in Oklahoma, that's...
Into the fabric of our society.
Into where you probably are if you're watching me.
Watch out if you have one of those lake homes up in Minneapolis, or up in Minnesota, I should say. Here's a...
United States. Bill Malusian is saying they are releasing entire family units into the United States. Now, some people are saying I'm being too harsh on Texas. Well, Texas, whether they like it or not, are front and center, smack dab in the middle of the great question of our time, which is, who runs the country? What do you do when you start to have a apathetic tyrant, now apathetic when it comes to immigration law, but very engaged when it comes towards forcing vaccinations? What do you do? I know so many amazing patriots in the great state of Texas, and I love Texas, that have been waiting and are willing for this moment. Deputize a citizen force. Put them on the border. Give them handcuffs. Get it done. Sure, that's dramatic. You know what's dramatic? The invasion of the country. We're going to talk more about that. We're going to talk about how the other side has openly admitted that this is about bringing in voters that they want and they like, and honestly diminishing and decreasing white demographics in America. We're going to say that part out loud because so many people in the corporate media are afraid to talk about it. Charlie Kirk here. Check out the Charlie Kirk.
So many in the corporate media are afraid to talk about the white replacement theory, except for Tucker Carlson.
Yeah,
and Hannity, basically.
And Sean Hannity.
Who coincidentally covered this and used the same language 2 days ago. It's not like Charlie Kirk watched that and then just repeated the same stuff because he didn't really have an original thoughts.
But. Well, I mean, the idea is like, this is a good example of what is dangerous about Tucker Carlson going on and saying that. He creates the oxygen in the space, in the room, mm-hmm. for Charlie Kirk to respond to it. And then the hundreds of other right-wing radio hosts around the country who are now also probably saying very similar things. And every time somebody opens that door and it gets further and further on to this white replacement theory, that's what it's about. We're allowing Haitian immigrants into this country to replace white people.
No sort of reflection on why any sort of refugee, whether they're from Afghanistan or Haiti, would automatically vote for the Democrats once they can vote. But I guess we'll just take that as read.
Well, right. Of course they would, right? Because the Democrats are allowing for them to come into the country and probably paying them off in order for votes. That's the implication.
And why wouldn't, I mean, I guess.
And of course they can vote because of the mass voter fraud that we've been talking about on this program. Right.
Here is Texas Congressman Brian Babin on Newsmax. This is the, you know, to the extent that the Republican Party is saying anything substantively that is not an own the libs things, it is the white race is being assaulted in this country right now. Continue.
Country. They're overloading our welfare system. We know what the Democrats are up to here. They want open borders. This is exactly their strategy. They want to replace the American electorate with a third world electorate that will be on welfare and public assistance, put them on a path to citizenship and amnesty, and enfranchise them with a vote, and they will have a permanent majority. This is why. We have a quote from 2015 from Vice President Joe Biden, who said essentially that is more and more people from the third world come in. That is a strengthening tactic for them. And by them, he means the Democratic Party.
Actually, he said the United States. And that clip, incidentally, was played the other night on Tucker Carlson, apparently, as well. And there is this presumption that immigrants are going to vote for Democrats, which I think is, you know, I don't think that's necessarily
accurate.
One of the
40 racist things you said in that.
There it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a congressman, so another indication of how Tucker Carlson is influencing the culture.
Just remember, when anybody like Tucker or these Republicans say that they're upset about what they're seeing on the border, what they really want is for Mexico or whatever South American country to sink the Haitians in the Gulf of Mexico before they can reach land.
And another example of the fact that no matter how draconian Biden chooses to be, that is going to be the segment that runs on Newsmax. Those are the segments that they're going to run on Fox News. That will be the talking point out of the right. Might as well do the right thing, although I'm not sure if Biden has a sense of what the right thing is here.
All right, let's try this. Let's do this last one here. Matt Leck apparently got involved in Twitter last night and made a really interesting point, which if there was any intellectual integrity to the karaoke brigade that is covering the, I'm trying to use their language specifically, the authoritarian measures by colleges that are akin to the authoritarian measures that we saw following 9/11. If there was any integrity there, which is, and let's be clear what their argument is. Their argument is that there is an overreaction to COVID on these campuses
by college bureaucrats.
They, of course, are speaking for the voiceless college students who, by all accounts, the majority of the students on these campuses and the majority of the parents who are sending them, in many instances paying or taking out loans, or majority of the people associated with the campus, all want these restrictions to the extent that they feel that COVID is a problem.
The majority of the ones that subjected themselves to Michael Tracy's karaoke time.
Exactly.
Right. And interesting, by the way, that they focus on college campuses and not, say, corporations, for example.
But let's just assume for a moment that their premise is correct, that COVID is not such a big deal that you can take these draconian measures. Where else might you find another such target? Where else might you find this dynamic where the specter of COVID instead of being dealt with rationally, is authoritarian and excessive and draconian.
Being used in an opportunistic way by reactionary forces.
Yes, where else might you find that? Well, Matt on Twitter pointed that out to the karaoke brigade.
Yeah, so Tracy was upset that we covered his little college stunt. Sure. And Michael says, if anyone's creepily infatuated, it's these weirdo YouTube pundits who choose to spend their time constantly gossiping about me. Now, we did a little bit of talking about the girlfriend that Glenn and Tracy always bring up. But that wasn't really the thrust of the topic.
Who we wouldn't have brought up in any derisive way if Glenn hadn't, for some reason, brought it up himself. But
we can call a truce on that.
Yeah. Right. And let's be clear here. Michael Tracy is just an example. He is an avatar of a certain attitude on I don't know where to put them politically necessarily. The self-styled anti-authoritarians who find authoritarianism in only very convenient places for them. And
almost like they have blinders on.
It's almost as if they can only see it in one silo. But yet their whole brand is, I don't have a party. I am a journalist. Thus my microphone and my amplifier. I am a journalist. And so I don't pick sides. I report the truth. So I don't have blinders. If I see this authoritarian draconian response to COVID,
I don't care whose toes I step on.
It doesn't matter. Do I need to be an expert on higher education or health matters to comment on a response by a college? I do not.
Do I need to be even really covering Title 42 to understand the bullshit justification using COVID safety that's it's being used to? Do I need to be covering it to even comment on it?
Well, maybe.
Here is
Here is Matt challenging the karaoke brigade.
Yeah, so Zaid basically quote tweets Michael saying, another in the genre of colleges are just full of kids, don't criticize anything new, blah blah blah. Yeah, and then I quote tweet them. I was glad for the engagement. Hi Zaid and Michael, since you're both so sincere about covering the state use of COVID to attack human rights beat, I'm curious when you Tucker guests will get around to condemning the faux COVID safety justification for Title II expulsions. How does Tucker feel? And then you can
Title 42. Out. 42.
Yeah.
Now just to be clear, Title 42 it's was a Trump initiated. A provision that said, instead of processing immigrants under the auspices of the COVID emergency. And I think these guys would certainly say, like, this is not March 2020. Yeah. Under the auspices of the COVID emergency, we don't need to follow any procedures in deporting them. We can just grab them, put them on a plane. Doesn't matter if they have a claim to asylum or to temporary protected status. We just get rid of them. That is an abuse of Title 42, particularly if you are sensitive to this dynamic, one would imagine. Matt posed it to him. Let's show their reply to Matt's questioning. Like, why haven't you spoken up about this? This has nothing to do with Tucker Carlson necessarily, although it is a good example of, you know, it's hard to, these guys don't believe in labels.
Hey, I would use if I could get on Tucker Carlson's show and advocate for the taking down of Title 42 and admission of Haitians, I would do it personally.
But let's be fair. Please show their response, because this is low hanging fruit. This is a gimme, because all you got to say is that's bad too.
Yeah. And I'll get around to it.
Michael says, I don't know or care how Tucker feels. That's weird, because I think we all know her or and some of us care how Tucker feels about that issue. I've been covering a different issue entirely, and your little crew's response was to launch yet another YouTube gossip session that had nothing to do with what I've actually written, said. Happy to discuss it on air, creep.
Well, here is, we're not discussing whatever, you know, whatever he's doing with his girlfriend or whatever it is.
Or how delightful
I'm
she
asking
is.
A direct question about when he's going to condemn the Title 42.
Yes, like where is the intellectual integrity, the journalistic integrity, the integrity of your principle that we are overreacting as a society to COVID? When it comes to the idea that COVID is justifying the complete abridgment of our statutory protections that we allow for refugees and immigrants.
And yeah, not a reaction that is very well documented as not legal when we were looking at both international law and United States law. So law is not always a useful way to look at some of these things, but for their purposes, it could not be more clear cut. We are supposed to have an asylum process in this country, and the usage of Title 42 infringes upon that process. And so you want to talk about authoritarianism?
It totally obliterates.
Obliterates it, yeah.
And let's be clear. There's no question that a private college has the legal right to impose restrictions.
Is Connecticut College violating international law?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even abridging its own policies.
Michael and Zayed and everybody who's in favor of this or against it, who are covering this as their beat, are they in favor of abolishing private colleges and funding public universities so that maybe, you know, they can have a say in their elected officials making authoritarian or not decisions over college students? I don't know. Something to float to them.
I just think the direct question should be easy, and I think it's revelatory that they can't answer this question. Now, I would imagine now that they are, you know, called on it. That they may very well do, because this is a game of hide the ball for them, right? Like, there is only one major problem in this country, and when it comes to COVID overreaction, that is schools. Because let's be clear, he's also moved on to other institutions. And to ignore the summary expulsion of thousands of people to a country that has been clearly ravaged by disaster, political and disasters that are at least, you know, we have hurricane and floods and earthquake. To ignore that, particularly, like, maybe it's not their responsibility to be just sort of like randomly doing it, but the question's been asked, should be like, oh, I have no opinion. It hasn't even occurred to me.
Also, it's not
I'm covering
he's
something else entirely. So how would I even ever comment on
right.
That?
That's the point is, I mean, if he's only narrowly covering one particular beat, it's not like he has an editor that says you're only allowed to cover, I don't know, energy policy. He's of Substack. He can cover whatever he wants, and so he can make a determination on what's proportionally more of a government overreach. Is it Title 42, or is it the private policies of private colleges?
Why might one in that position be afraid to defend the right of Haitian immigrants, let's say, to have a fair hearing as to whether they temporary protected status is warranted. Why might one be afraid to do that on Twitter?
Yeah.
Which, incidentally, was a very good piece that showed that in terms of growing your Substack, Twitter is really the only way to do it. And so if you're on Twitter and your Substack relies on a certain audience that has a certain perspective about things,
certain feeling about Haitian immigrants,
you might be reluctant, even if it's a nuanced position, even if you had to say, I, of course, have mixed feelings about the idea of allowing more Haitian immigrants into the country.
That's problematic.
There is, this is an example of COVID overreach. You might be afraid that, like, well, I want to make it clear. Look at my first qualification. I have questions about Haitian immigrants coming in.
I mean, well, that's because what I call the Tucker guests, what they do is lie by emphasis to support a right-wing agenda, basically. Mm-hmm. And so Zaid himself and a few of the other guys retweet the images of the people under the bridge saying, like, the cruelty is the point, and that's sort of the Biden hypocrisy point. Not saying we should be processing these people to let them
right.
in, because guess what? All of their audience would hate that.
Yes.
Look at the people who comment and quote tweet on those tweets saying, what do we owe these people? Why didn't they follow the laws? Why don't they respect our laws? That's the audience these people are cultivating. So none of these people, and I would love all the Substack crew to get together and all come up with their own individual numbers of how many Haitian immigrants you want. Combine that, and then we'll see what the total number is between all of you guys.
Be fascinating.
Says happy to discuss on air. Maybe we can pin him down on that. I don't know.
I think Binder's
my experience with Michael Tracy is that he will say he's happy to discuss something on air, but when he does come on air, he will not answer those questions. It took me 15 minutes, I think, when I had him on about some squealing he was about the Russiagate to finally tire of asking him the same question that he refused to answer.
Wanted you to apologize because you had Marcy Wheeler on.
And I specifically asked Glenn Greenwald, when I had Glenn Greenwald on, should I apologize about Marcy Wheeler? And he said explicitly, no.
Oh, and speaking of China, by the way, I just have to get this out there about the Russiagaters. The deal between the United States and Australia and the UK to ramp up tensions in the region of China in order to increase our presence and pivot to Asia is much more of a Cold War threat than anything that came out of the clumsy political rhetoric of the Russiagaters. I'm curious to see, I know that Marjorie Taylor Greene is on the floor, House floor, talking about China, and I know that Tucker Carlson himself is quite concerned about China, definitely not motivated by racism in any way. If any of these folks, Greenwald, Jelani, Tracy...
They're off that beat now.
Yeah, but like... The point is that Russiagate was always an opportunity to talk about liberal hypocrisy outside of everything else. It's the same thing when they, you know, talk about, oh, look at Biden and the way he's responded to immigration. Do they favor a more humane immigration policy? Are they against Title 42? Of course not. It's just useful in order to own the libs. It was the same thing with Russiagate. If they were seriously concerned about some sort of Cold War ramp up, they would be talking at length about the United States' new foreign policy stance towards China. I haven't heard much of that.
No, it is sort of surprising. They're off that beat now. They're off the atomic clock beat. Matt on the IM. Hey, Sam, it's my friend's birthday today. Can I get a shofar for Ice Wallow? Nice try.
Nope.
Nice try. It was the dash that made it, that gave you away. The beginning and the end. Sam, you fucking bitch and bucket of shit. Holy sweet Jesus, are you a despicable donkey winker?
Do you know what that's a reference to? That's a reference to my diary that I talked about on air when I was cursing about that ref.
Oh, Jesus.
I called her a fucking bitch. The bucket of shit.
There you go. You look like a poorly rendered cartoon that some dumbass kid wished to come to life so he could at least know that there was one pathetic fiddle fuck on this earth who's more lame than him. I can't believe Emma and the crew have to talk to you on a daily basis. Honestly, I think I'd rather go firewalking while sporting an M80 with a 3-foot wick as a butt plug. Anyway, I love the show and just wanted to ask, why does God let bad things happen? Tune in the coming weeks to hear the answer for that. Gupek, I thought there were only one budget resolution that could be used each year. Is Mitch forcing the Dems to use it on the debt ceiling?
Each fiscal year.
No, each fiscal year. But there was a ruling from the parliamentarian.
Speaking of why does God let bad things happen?
Yeah, exactly. There was a ruling. I'm sorry. I failed in that instance. There was a ruling by the parliamentarian. Wherein the parliamentarian said that there were other reconciliation measures. I mean, you remember back, like, I think this was like 3 or 4 months ago, and it was misreported that they you can do it. There, you can in some narrowly tailored ways. I'm not exactly sure why, but it's ridiculous. Ted Leo, Sam, for Matt, I was also slapped at Boy Scout camp at Camp Tamarack in New Jersey. We were given Jell-O cup with some industrial food grade whip cream, and after lunch one day, while jokingly complaining with a friend of mine, it tastes like baby barf. I was 11 or 12. The young guy who led my troop at the camp reached across the commissary table and smacked me across the face for being disrespectful. Needless to say, I left and never came back, never having officially made the rank of tenderfoot.
Yeah, me neither.
J.R., McAuliffe is trailing in Virginia. This is one of the many reasons why primaries are so crucial. The base is not excited about McAuliffe, and he may lose the general because of low turnout. In my opinion, what's your take? I don't know. I just don't know. I haven't paid attention to the race enough to really get a sense of that, and I have a feeling we'll see as we get closer. Boston Bernie Bro, the border guards are horses are literally the most innocent participants in the whole scenario. Indeed. Josh from Tucson, I love the headline, Arizona audit results revealed Donald Trump lost to Joe Biden by an even bigger margin. Emma, as we say, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning. Mm-hmm. A Square, yes, big structural changes in immigration policy. No real horsies. Different type of sake bomb, Emma. On another front, Chris Cuomo, yes, we addressed. Walrus, holy hell, I remember the Great Replacement was just nonsense for conspiracy nuts. Now it's been mainstream. Dave Pear, Sam, two things. Do you think McConnell secretly wants the Dems to get rid of the filibuster so he doesn't have to do it when if he gets back into power? I don't think he'll hesitate for a moment if he wants to get rid of the filibuster to get rid of it. I don't think he'll hesitate for a moment. In fact, look, the bottom line is the filibuster is much more helpful for the Republicans than it is the Democrats because there is no provisions that they have that they really want to impose. They don't want to be able to do those things. And so, no. Two, my moderate father became more liberal when he became older and started getting Social Security and Medicare benefits. Think the same thing happened to Biden and wants to remember history, remember him in a big way? I don't know. Most socialists. Hey, guys, on a bike trip across Missouri from KC to St. Louis and back going through some reddest towns here. You have been my lifeline. 2 days in a row, the theme song is Push Me Through the End of the Day. Love all you do for what you do. Thank you. Wayne Kerr. Can we get a go shofar for Ro Khanna's amendment to end support for the war in Yemen passing yesterday? We can, indeed.
Yes.
All right, four more. A whip record. Acetaminophen, you see the medicine. See the what is the difference if the results are the same? Nantucket man. On the subject of Limerix, there once was a proven Limerix vaccine.
Oh. Fuck.
There once was a proven vaccine as effective as any we've seen, but one side effect, as I recollect, that it was gave you an agonizing... Okay. Mike Hunt. God damn it. The Chris Lapaco. It's Cuomo primetime, not 360.
360's AC. AC 360.
Ivana Camelot. Sam's Alex Jones is so good. Ha. Huh? Rob from Dedham. Can someone buy Alex Jones some manila folders?
I'm just realizing there's a whole section of the audience that doesn't remember when we used to do Alex Jones all the time.
All the time.
And do his voice till it maxed out the board for like
exactly.
Half
hour. Cornholio. Alex Jones is the one I can do. It is the one I can do. Elon says the primary reason he and Grimes have separated is because he has to spend so much time in Texas with Tesla while she's in Cali for work. He may have killed his marriage to avoid Taxes. And the final IM of the week. Between Andy Kindler's jokes and Chris Pratt being cast as Super Mario, says CJ, there's a lot of anti-Italian violence in the world these days. Matt, Bradley, Emma, great job this week. Folks, you also did well. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know some.